N4DJC.
8-0-GR.
Are you staying cool?
Doing okay. It's about 74 degrees here in the house. And it's 90 outside, so I'm perfectly satisfied. Feels like 95. We went out a little bit this morning and picked up some peaches and what else we pick up, Mom? Huh? Oh, we took the trash to the dump, Jerry. Exciting stuff.
Like our day so far. Watered the grass this morning, watered the sod, and we had to get us a little set to date, and we're about public to pick up a few items. And so we're back home now, and that's about it for us until later on this evening if it cools off. It wasn't bad yesterday evening after 7. It wasn't bad at all. I had a little bit of a breeze here, and to cool off some. It wasn't quite as humid as it has been, but it's still pretty toasty today, but it's not like it has been. Today seems like it's a little hotter today than it was yesterday. I can already tell it's probably going to be quite as nice later this evening as it was yesterday. Looks like we might get some rain this weekend, but I remain skeptical whether we'll actually get any of it or not.
Right on it. Daughter's got her big fireworks show tomorrow night. I don't even want. When is it? Friday? Well, Friday night. I don't even want to go to that. It's just oppressive outside, Jerry.
Tomorrow must have been Monday maybe or sometime. I'm not sure when it was. They had one over there. They have a pre-4. They go over there and they, I take it back, it's probably Tuesday, I guess. And, they have it there down at the dam, which is about close to the dam, which is about a 45 minute drive for us, maybe 35. But I just didn't, it was so hot, I just didn't want to go down there, didn't want to get out and, drive back home in the dark. We did have a few hot air balloons coming up this morning, about 7:30. I saw 2 or 3, I think. I don't think they had that. I think they have that thing in Simpsonville now, that Parade of Weekend Law thing. I don't think they have it here, but somebody was up there cruising around.
Sorry. Yeah, I always love to see those, but I don't want to be up in one of them. Well, a little bit of control. I'd fly in almost anything, but not one of those. But it looks like fun. I went out to work on the Denver, Colorado water supply one time. We sold them some water valves, large ones. I think they were 36 inch or so. And I went out there to set them and make sure the electrical was right. And a morning when I'd go to work there, it was beautiful to see those things coming up over the mountains, and they'd launch them real early in the morning.
Been up for a while. You could hear them hitting the gas to bring them, get them up. They weren't that high when I saw them, but when I had it here, we'd have them landing almost in our backyard, about 150 yards from us. It's kind of a big field on the way down to Sam's down. Brown Road down there, and two or three wind up landing in the field down there, and they'd wind up people's backyards and all kinds of stuff. And I don't understand why they do stuff like that. These high tension lines around, they're just asking for trouble, especially if you don't really know what you're doing. Because they go over wherever the prevailing wind takes them.
Tell you like it is, I worked on 483 phase all my life, and it only takes one mistake, and that's much higher voltage than I was working on.
For years here, we had some guys flying those ultralights late in the evening. They were pretty, they had to be above 1,000 feet, I guess. I was one guy in particular. I don't know if he had a, how many of those things have to have a tail number or not. I don't recall, but I saw one guy in particular. It was always the same one every time. He'd fly over about dusk in the spring, early spring, and then the fall when it was nice and cool and wind was calm. I hadn't seen any of those guys had it all in the last number of years, I guess. I did see a C-130 fly over, Musgrave fly over. It could have been more than 1,500 feet, I guess. Did see him fly over. I saw a couple of F-16s not long ago fly it over, two of them fly it over the daughter's house. I don't see, I know they test them, but I don't see them that often.
The grandson sent me a picture of some planes, wanted to know what they were. They were flying over Lyman Lake up here, which is probably 15 minutes from us. And it was Navy jets, and they were the ones that they train new pilots in, and they were flying low level over the lake over there.
Like I said, yeah, they build them locally, those F-16s. So we used to see a fair amount of traffic, but those people talk about them breaking the sound barrier and that sort of thing. I said, that doesn't happen that often. They don't really have permission to do that unless somebody gives them clearance to, unless they're doing some higher altitude testing. But I haven't heard any of them in a long, long, long time. But yeah, I see those trainers fly over every once in a while. We don't get quite as much traffic here since it's basically a small, very small airport. It doesn't have I don't know if they even got a full time control tower there. Now they may not. But I did see them when we were living in Chiral, the local place there had extended airport for jet flight because CEO of the company that I worked for had a, I don't know if he had a Lear or what he had a, might have been a Citation. It was a nice jet though. And he paid him out of the company funds to extend the airport long enough to fly his, and then there's some guy, then there's some guy flying the older, a fighter of some type. I can't remember which one it was. It was a straight wing. And it didn't look like a trainer, but it probably was. It looked like it had a place for the air tanks on the wing tips, I guess. I mean, the fuel tanks on the wing tips. But I don't know what, I can't remember which model number that would have been, but it was a straight wing.
W2T.
Probably a T-33 Shooting Star. They had the wing tanks out on the tips of the wings. Hi, Rusty. Go ahead.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Jim. I was listening to you all talk about the hot air balloons. One thing about those things is they're at the mercy of the wind as to which direction they go. And when they're flying around in areas, the pilots on those things, they've got to be licensed pilots to be able to fly those things. They have to be certified and go through a course and everything else. But when it comes to landing those things, you were talking about where they landed and things. They have to, if they are at a point where they're running low on gas and everything else, they need to find an available clear area that they can come down. I've flown on three different ones over a period of years. I flew it several times at Freedom Weekend aloft, and then over here in Spartanburg they had an event. And I flew with one of the pilots there. I knew him and several people. And he put down in somebody's backyard in the far end of their garden where there was nothing growing, but they were there because he had to put down, and he had to get to the ground because the wind was picking up, and we were in an area with a lot of power lines, so we had to get down. And the other two flights I was on, one we landed in a big field out near Donaldson Center, and the other we landed in a pasture at a guy's farm, and he had no cows in this particular pasture, so we were able to land it. And they have to land close enough that their recovery vehicles can get in there, because when they load back up so they can move those things out of there. So, been there, done that, don't have a t-shirt for it, and don't want one, but I would love to fly again someday. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, Roger, this is N0TR. No joy on flying in those hot air balloons. And you cost me $10 this morning, Rusty. I got the lottery fever, and I went over there to get gas, and I bought a $10 ticket for Bernice. And, I don't know what kind of luck. What kind of luck do you have, Bernice? It was a dead bird. Just showed my money out. Go ahead, Jerry.
I don't think I ever been up in a hot air balloon. As a matter of fact, I know I had. I don't think anybody threw me on one, but it had a lot of those tethered ones here where they tethered and take you up and that sort of thing, but I didn't see any. Didn't see any fun in that. And one of my college fraternity brothers, he had a, this was back in the late 60s, he had a, I want to say it was a Cessna, a high wing Cessna. I don't know whether they were making more CV2s in or not, but it was a nice, you know, tricycle gear thing. And I had another buddy of mine that had a Piper Tri-Pacer. I've flown a lot of those, and one of my other buddies had a Bonanza, which is a really nice airplane. And one of my college professors, that was actually a, he was a, hang on a second, had a, been in South Korean Air Force, and he was like jet qualified, but he had a full airbag Citabria. He would take me up in sometimes, and I tell you one thing, that guy, he was a great pilot, but he was scared of crap out of me every time he did those wing overs and rolls, and you know, he was qualified down to maybe 400 feet. And that thing was fast too. It was a lot faster than me. It looks a little bit like a Cessna, but it sure as heck don't fly like one.
I went in some small planes, but I was flying with a pilot that I knew. She went to my church, and she was a champion female pilot. She did these women's races for years and all over the country, and she was won a number of trophies and medals in those. But she took me up in what they had a slow plane for those folks that were trying to do aerial photography. And she took me up in that a couple of times to do some aerial pictures. And that was always fun because it slows way down and you can get some good pictures from up in the air like that when you're over property. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, that plane my grandson flew in down here at this Triple Tree Airfield by Woodruff the other day, it was one mate for National Geographic, Jerry, and the photographer sat in the front of it, and it was a Rotax engine like they put on the paragliders and that, and I've flown in them two or three times or more, I don't remember, but it was really neat because it had a lot of surface area on the wings. And it could go really, really slow. But somehow it got back from Africa over here, and it's down there at the Triple Tree place. And they took their students that were going to this summer camp up for a flight. He's going to take me, but the wind come up, and they don't like wind by any means. And it was gusting to about 20. And I just do not go up in something like that when it's gusting that high. Go ahead, Jerry.
A plane like that, I don't think, Tom, I know they exist. At least if I saw one, I probably wouldn't recognize him. But they were building, I don't know where they're still building, as Mavs. It was, I think that's what it was, down in Central Georgia. And a lot of people flew those instead of, because they were, you know, they were new built. They weren't me. You had to worry about buying a Super Cub. It was 50 years old. And those are good flying planes. They could take off and land in maybe 130, 140 feet or something like that. And they put the big Tundra tires on them. And that's what the old guy used to be on TBS back in the early 70s. Frank White, he was the guy that did the Southern Sportsman magazine show. shows and stuff. He had that zebra stripe plane. That was what he flew. Those were good flying planes. But they flew pretty slow. The only thing about flying is I've flown a few times myself. I swear that, you know, when you're short, it's awful hard to see over that console.
Check me out. I got a phone call here and I need to take this, so I'll talk to both of you later. W2T, intro TR to take it.
Okay, Rusty. I'll talk to you later. Yeah, Jerry, I sent you a picture of that, and I sent a picture to Rusty of this air cam that used to fly for National Geographic. And that's my grandson in the front seat up there.
I know that when I worked in Fort Mill, and actually, I was living right here working for Mel, but our company helicopter pilot lived in a apartment complex my wife managed, so Reeves would, sometimes he'd take me out, and they had a Jet Ranger, and sometimes he'd drive down and pick it up and come back land in the apartment complex out in the center right there. We had plenty of room, and they would have me. This was back when VHS recorder, you know, cameras and stuff were first available to the general public. And he'd take me up and I'd film the plants from there. We'd fly all over North Carolina and South Carolina. We'd fly to Florida and up to Pisco, North Carolina, and fly other places. And they had them. You know, the Colonel Springs, he was a World War I ace aviator. And he had the Springs executive office up there designed he had the windows pointing outward like you do on a, designed like it was a Zeppelin, you know, gondola, whatever you call them. But he used to have a staggered wing beach he'd flew when he was still living. This has been years and years ago. And they still had the airfield out there in Reeves, they had a chopper landed pad on top of the building there, but we flew all, he told me back then, I said, Reeves, what did it cost to run this thing? He said, about $500 an hour. I said, that's too rich for my blood.
Is it, Derek?
78 or 79, I thought he told me it was about $500 an hour just for fuel.
Yeah, that's a bunch. Well, when I was flying in the Navy, many times I swear I've seen water coming off the propellers on that S2 Grumman, and our minimums in daytime was 100 feet. And I don't know when you got excited and got down near where you were really on top of a submarine, that they abided by that. Might have just been the air quality down there over the ocean. I don't know. But, of course, this was out over the ocean. 100 feet in the daytime, 300 feet at night. And I got to tell you, it made you a little nervous at night. In the P-3 Orion, it had a 99-foot 80-inch wingspan, and it had the same minimums. And it also got way down there. And I always thought about that wing. It was really close to the water.
Down over the open ocean, that's kind of scary there. It don't take much of a swell to get up close enough to tickle a wingtip.
When you were doing that, you were flying over sonobuoys, like I always use the number 5 on a dice, and you had sonobuoys laid out in that pattern, and you'd be flying over them and bombing 1 and listing 3 and yada, yada, yada with Julie, The thing of it was, when you were doing that and flying in that cloverleaf pattern, there was a helicopter right out in the middle of that, and we had to dodge him, and he had a dipping sonar sticking down in the water below his helicopter. Yeah, it was a hoot, but when you're that age, you just didn't worry about it.
That's right. You don't pay much attention to that. It didn't bother me about going up in that chopper, and of course I've been in them before, but a lot of people wouldn't get it. They wouldn't ride. They said, no, I'm not going. Yeah, that would scare them. But the people had flown at them, you know, before, you know, it wasn't quite the same thing. You know, of course, you weren't getting shot at either, Tom says. It's a whole different deal. But one of the guys I know was a pilot, and I guess he was in. I think he flew a. I want to say he flew that little. It looks like a huge 500. It's like a. It must have been a Kyogre or something like that. The little ones that had the 50 cals on them. They flew in them with a. They came in at covered the. You know, when the slicks were coming in. I think that's what it was. And after he got out in 68 or 69, maybe, he bought one of those little huge 300s, you know, one that's got the little plexiglass bubble deal. And he was dusting crops and making a good living at it, too, because, you know, up in Georgia, northern part of Georgia, the fields aren't that big. But, you know, he could fly that thing. It didn't cost a whole lot to fly that one. He did a lot cheaper than they could get out there and do it with a tractor.
TR. Yeah, we hired my nephew when he was learning to fly. He was in the Beach Aircraft Club out there in Wichita because his mom worked for him. And we hired him to fly over to St. Louis and pick my brother up and his new wife and fly him back over to Pittsburgh, which was about 250 miles. And he was renting all glass digital dash Beechcraft Bonanza A100, I think it was. It wasn't a T-tail. It was a newer model. And, boy, you're talking about a Cadillac. I think that thing had 260 horsepower or so, and it cruised right along, I think about 180. And he got that thing because his mom worked there for $34 an hour, Jerry.
Keep fly a Piper. Keep fly a Cub on it for $40 or $50 an hour, I don't guess. Lynn's brother, he had a low wing, and I can't remember what his was, a Piper or something. I don't remember what his was. And he sold it. He has Alzheimer's, and he's in terrible shape. He's a few years younger than she is. He got early onset Alzheimer's, and he flew, he had his own accounting business, CPA, just a brilliant guy. And He can barely talk, and that's just heartbreaking. But he had a low wing, and he loved flying that thing. It wasn't that expensive to fly his, I don't think. But I think he paid about 30 or 40 grand for his when he bought it. It was an older plane. But I know that Bonanza my buddy had, this was about 1987 or 88, and I think one of the guys, he was one of the, I mean, that's this thing dropped. Parts vendors, and he's in a big business with a company, millions and millions of dollars worth of business. And he was talking about that Bonanza, and one of the guys there, one of the loom fixers, technical guys there in the plant said, "What does that thing cost? About $90,000? And he said, "You couldn't even buy the avionics in it for $90,000. I think that thing was about $400,000 for the one he had. It was a V-tail. His might have been a turbo Bonanza, but that thing was fast. I mean, that thing could fly, turn 30 knots without even breaking a sweat.
Turbo. Bonanza, Steve was flying us, and he flies 787s now, but it was... about $300,000 or more, Jerry, back then, is what Steve told us. And he flew us down the Ozarks one time and flew over Christ of the Ozarks. It's a huge statue of Christ down there. I can't remember by what town. And then we did a touch and go down at Joplin, Missouri. He was always set in his ways. He wanted to be an airline pilot, and so he joined the Air Guard, and he flew C-130s. And from there, he went to, DC-9s or MD-80s, and then 757, 767, and then 777, and finally the 787. So he must be pretty good at it. But, I talked to a boy down there at that airfield. I sent you a picture of that, by the way. I talked to a guy down there last week, a young man that was taking flying lessons, And he said that with an instructor now, it's $150 an hour. And I said, how long? It used to be 40 hours. He said, no, it's more like 75 hours now.
He used to let us do it for introductory deal for more or less of like, you know, 25 or 30 bucks introductory lessons, and they weren't that expensive, probably $50 or something like that at most. This was back in the probably mid-70s, I guess. But I knew I couldn't afford an airplane, so I'd say that just wasn't for me as much as I enjoyed doing it. My sight was very good then. I was one of the girls who tested our eyes at the plane I worked at. She said, you got fighter pilot eyes. I said, I don't have a fighter pilot's dexterity and don't have the intelligence of one either. She laughed. But it was real interesting day. It was just a lot of fun to be around people. And I knew, like I said, a little bit around them. And we flew up to Dayton Ham Fest one year and one of our friends, Cessna's, and we just had a great time up and back. It wasn't a bad flight. It was nice. Of course, they got no air conditioning on the ground, so it got nice when we got up about 6,000, 7,000 feet. So I really enjoyed that, and I don't know whether he's still living or not, but he was just a great guy.
Not crazy about the little ones anymore. I'd fly in them, but I'm not crazy about them. You feel more like, in a Cessna 150, more like the wind's got you than you got the wind. The last one I flew in was a 172, and it was just fine. We flew down to Clemson, flew over the stadium and the university, and landed down there for a little while and come back. But I had a guy, a number of years ago, we was in Sam's Club down at Joplin, Missouri, and I got to chatting with him. Our wives were out shopping, and he had just had a Cessna 150, I think it was, and it might have been a 172, and just had a major overhaul on it, and had all new upholstery done in it and everything, and he offered to sell that to me for $30,000, Jerry. Bet you couldn't buy one for that now.
That is the last time I looked to the Super Cup back in probably in the mid-80s, like I said, a buddy of mine had a bonanza. He was about to have a fit to buy a Super Cup. We found a 1978 when I think it was about $80,000 then. Of course, they quit making them, you know, for years. But that's still real popular. But I said, you go up to Alaska, you can see those things. You can see all those planes just littered all over those mountainsides where they flew in the mountains. I said, I ain't doing it. And those guys that had to fly them in Vietnam and in World War II for observations, they said tail draggers. I said, that's a good way to get yourself killed.
All those beavers up there, and they're a good plane, but they sure have a lot of crashes up in Alaska every year. I don't know. I suppose in the summertime it'd be okay. The brother to the pilot is a medical scientist, and he took my brother-in-law and sister-in-law up there, and they flew back into a stream somewhere in Alaska and fished for trout and that. And there was a guy who stood there on the bank with a 12-gauge shotgun the whole time because the bears were so close. They had a really great time, but I think I could pass on that.
For DJC. Yeah, I passed on it when the same guy that had a bonanza was telling me about he and his brother. They were, I probably told you the story, were flying into bears in Alaska. Outfitter was evidently he was kind of shady. You keep flying the same day. So he flew into this little line cabin somewhere out there, and it was out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it was just tundra and had a stream not too far from place, but you got no wood in there, so they were about to run out of wood, and when he got back to his place of operation, the Bishop Myers, folks arrested him, and he didn't tell them that he'd left 200, you know, 58 miles away, and he was stranded up there for about, he told me 8 or 10 days, and he and his brother were trying to talk to him, going to walk out, and he said, if we go right now, he said, we'll never make it. And his wife finally called Jesse Helms when she didn't hear from this back before they had sat phones and that sort of thing. And they hadn't heard from him in a while. And they went back and somebody got a hold of that outfitter and did basically about where to put a gun to his head or not. They finally told him where they were. And he said when he got back, it was all it could take. And he said, it's all I could stand. Not to put a 375 H&H right between that guy's eyes for leaving the South End. I think that guy wound up serving about 15 years in prison, I think, something like that. They finally got him. It took him a long time to prosecute him. He said he finally got him. After that, I said, I have no compunction at all about avoiding a trip to Alaska.
This is N0TR. Yeah, I understand that, Jerry. Well, I got to run. The wife wants me to come do something for her. And so I'll catch you down the line. Great talking to you this afternoon. Happy Independence Day. And 73, Jerry. In 4, DJC. In 0TR.
Head back downstairs and take my afternoon Biden nap. So I'll talk to you later. You and Bernice have a good sport. If I don't hear from between now and then, N0TR, N4DJC.
Yeah, don't forget to look at that picture. I sent you a text of it, Jerry.
Now, that's pretty cool. Oh, that's wild looking. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. N4DJC, 7-3 time.
Yeah, it's one of a kind. I never seen anything like that before. Anyways, it looks like an ultralight, but it's not classified as that. 73, Jerry, N0TR clip.
You're talking about the 42-4 KJ. Before Delta, yeah. Before
Jerry, no problem. N0TR clear.
3D4 KPI. Double 4DFO. D4KPI, this is Whiskey 4 Delta Foxtrot. Your 4 Delta Foxtrot clear. WD4KTI, WD4KTI, this is W4DF, Whiskey 4 Delta Foxtrot calling. You listen, Fred? W4DF, no station not heard, W4DF is clear.